Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast. I'm Janie Lee Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quit lit authors, and sober heroes. Welcome to this bonus episode, special edition of Alcohol Free Life podcast. This one is for you, whatever your state of booze, because this one is not really about the booze. This one is all about Claire Pooley and her absolutely amazing new books. It's a kind of book club episode, this one. And the reason I'm doing this is because I've known Claire for ages. Claire, of course, is the author of The Sober Diaries, which is an incredible, amazing book if you haven't already read it. And it's the book that led me to my sobriety. So I'm eternally grateful to Claire. And many other people, of course. But also, we interviewed Claire on BBC Radio 2 about the Authenticity Project, the novel. But of course, we didn't actually get to meet in person, and we didn't get to do a very long interview. And that felt like such a shame, because I think there's so many people who would like to hear a bit more in depth about Claire's amazing book. It's perfect for these times, the perfect lockdown book. Welcome, Claire.
Thank you. Hello.
It's so good. It's so lovely. Yeah, lovely to virtually see you.
Virtually. Yeah, you know what? I can't wait for the time when we can all give each other a big hug.
Oh, I know. So, actually, one of my sons was saying, oh, I think this will change the course of our lives forever, and people won't shake hands anymore. I said, oh, please, God, I hope not. I really hope not. Contact is so important. It's so important, isn't it?
Yeah, it really does make you realize that. And I hope that one of the things that will come out of all of this is that we'll be reminded about, you know, how important some of those really little things are, you know, sort of being able to see your friends face to face, being able to give people a hug, just being able to get on an aeroplane. Imagine the excitement.
Imagine. So you have got the perfect lockdown book, though of course you didn't know that at the time. Just before we get into the Authenticity Project, then just very briefly tell us a bit about your background and how you came to write The Sober Diaries, and then how that led to you writing your debut incredible novel.
Let's start about 5 years ago. So just over 5 years ago, I was a very busy mum of three young kids, and like everybody, you know, I would get to the end of the day and feel pretty sort of exhausted by the whole thing. So I'd pour myself a large glass of wine, and it was sort of wine o'clock. It was me time, and that was my way of relaxing. And I'm sure everybody can associate with that one. And over time, that one glass led to two glasses, and two glasses led to three glasses. And three glasses are, when they're big ones like mine, are a whole bottle. And before I knew it, I was drinking more than a bottle of wine a day, which is obviously going to have huge effects on your sort of mental and physical health, which it did. And I came to the conclusion that I had to eventually, you know, after much, much soul searching and hand wringing, that I had to quit. But I was too ashamed to tell anyone about it. And, you know, I think everyone can associate with, and now I look back and I think, did I find it so shameful? But you know, at the time it really was. And so instead of telling anyone in real life about it, I started blogging. And, you know, I'd always loved writing, but I hadn't written anything for, apart from emails and texts, you know, for decades. But blogging became my therapy. So every day I would write about what I was going through and how I was feeling. And initially I didn't really think anyone would find my blog. I called it Mummy Was a Secret Drinker. And but amazingly they did, and within a year I'd had nearly a million hits on the blog. And then people started saying, look, you really should turn this into a book. So, you know, I thought, well, you know, I've been anonymously blogging for a year, but it felt like it was time to come out and sort of, you know, own it. So I published a memoir called The Sober Diaries, and with Hodder and Stoughton. And that's when I met you, because Janie and Steve Wright interviewed me on the Steve Wright Show, so 2 years ago, and just when the Sober Diaries came out. And you know what? It made me realize that telling, you know, being honest about your life, telling the real truth about your life can make extraordinary things happen, not just for you, but for other people, because so many people got in touch with me and said they'd heard me on that show and then gone out and bought the book and that the book had changed their lives. Mm. And that really gave me the idea for my novel, because I started thinking, God, what would happen if everybody told the truth about their lives and how amazing that would be. Mm. And that's what gave me the idea for this, the Authenticity Project.
So, yeah. Just before we talk many more about the book, just back up just for 1 second, because I think this thing about the shame is really, really interesting. Mm. Because I also had the same thing, as you know. For years, I knew that I needed to quit the booze. I was having the 3 a.m. wake-ups, hating myself. But I didn't know how to do that. It didn't feel possible. And I didn't think there was anyone else like me. I thought I was the only person. I thought
I did too.
You've got those at rock bottom. That clearly wasn't me. You've got everyone else who, you know, seems perfectly happy with their one glass or whatever they have or whatever they do. They seem completely happy. So I thought it was only me having this turmoil. And that was what was so amazing reading your book and realizing that, okay, you'd gone through that and you had a lot, you know, we were both busy women and normal functioning, but we had this secret, if you like. And so that's what gave me the courage and many others to stop. But interestingly, I was exactly the same in that I felt a massive sense of shame. I didn't tell anyone at all apart from you. So I'm very grateful that you got the sounding.
I'm very grateful that you told me.
you were very good at calming me down on emails and stuff, but I didn't tell anyone. Now I look back, I think that's, I mean, I kind of understand it, but actually for me to have felt shame is ridiculous. I should have felt really proud of myself for doing this hard thing.
Absolutely.
If there's any shame, it should be for all the years that went before. But, and I guess there is now, but the shame for stopping is really weird. And it does link into your book because, you know, obviously you're going to tell us the premise of it in a moment, but it is this shame of owning who we are, isn't it? It's, and yet actually when we do own our own authenticity and we own our own secrets and share them, actually we find that we aren't the only one. There's a massive load of grey area drinkers. I found that when I was brave enough to come out.
And it is such a relief to discover there are other people just like you. And this is what I got from writing my blog and why I wanted to write the Sober Diaries, because, you know, I would share little things that I thought were just totally peculiar to me. So, for instance, you know, I used to have a real fear of supermarket cashiers or the cashiers in our local shop, because I thought that they were judging me by the amount of alcohol I was buying.
In your trolley.
Yeah, and I thought they would be thinking, oh, she came in yesterday and bought 2 bottles of wine and now she's buying another 2 bottles of wine. And, you know, and I used to rotate the shops I went to so that I wouldn't be sort of judged by cashiers. And I thought I was the only one that had this sort of, you know, fear of cashiers. And I shared this on my blog and I had so many people all over the world say, me too. And it made me realize that actually, you know, I really wasn't alone. And I wanted to, the reason I wanted to write the book is I'd read lots of memoirs about people drinking and it was all about the drinking years. So, you know, they would talk about, you know, how their lives got out of control and I could associate with all of that, although often it was much more extreme than my own experience was to date. And then at the end they'd say, and then I quit. And I think, well, what happened? How did you do it? And what happened next? And was it hard? And how long did it take to feel, and all those, you know, how long did it take to feel normal again? And all those things I wanted to know is really the reason why I published the Sober Diaries, because I wanted other people to realize that they really weren't alone and to know what to expect, I guess.
Yeah. And then when you decided that you were going to write a novel then, well, why did you decide to write a novel? And was it a conscious decision to use, I suppose, the, in a sense, you used the basis of the Sober Diaries as the premise, didn't you? Actually sort of sharing your innermost thoughts and feelings.
Yeah. I mean, I think the novels sort of approach the same, you know, can do the same thing as nonfiction, but in a different way. So, for instance, there is an addict in the novel. So there's a character called Hazard, and who is quite gorgeous, actually. He looks a bit like Bradley Cooper in my mind.
I love the way you're in love with your own lead character.
Yeah, I'm slightly in love with him. And he is he's a cocaine and alcohol addict. And at the beginning of the novel, he gives up. It's not a spoiler alert because this happens very early on. He gives up drinking and drugs. And, you know, and we follow his sort of journey along with the journey of several of the other characters, obviously. But we follow his journey through the book. And, you know, so, you know, through fiction, I can also explore, you know, the whole idea of going sober and how that makes you feel, and the good things and the bad things and all of those sorts of things. Mm. So, you know, I think fiction allows you to explore the same issues. And there are other issues that the book goes into, which, you know, I feel very strongly about. So social media addiction is one of them. Yeah. Also, it looks at loneliness and how lonely people can be in big cities. It looks at postnatal depression and how difficult it is to be, you know, at home with a small child. So, you know, I love the way that fiction can allow you to explore real world issues. But, you know, what I was able to do is to sort of, you know, explore those issues, but show how the characters can come through them and come out the other side.
Yeah.
So, you know, so hopefully, it's, you know, in reading it, it makes you feel much better about life and you know.
Mm. We should just set up the premise of the book. Do you want to do that for us? Just do the kind of synopsis.
Yeah, sure. It's called The Authenticity Project, and it's very much a feel-good novel. And it starts when a rather eccentric old artist called Julian Jessop gets a very, you know, ordinary green notebook, and on the front he writes The Authenticity Project, and inside he writes the truth about his life, and he is very lonely. And he tells his story, and then at the end he says, if you find this book, and you know what, then why don't you tell your own truth and leave the book for someone else to find? And the book is passed between six different people, sort of like a chain letter, and each of them writes a truth, a secret in the book, and they then manage to find each other, track each other down, and to change each other's lives in sort of quite extraordinary ways. Mm. So that's the basic idea.
Yeah, I mean, I just absolutely loved it. I just saved. I read it twice actually. Oh, absolutely savored every moment. It's really brilliant. What I loved about it is the way that you weave these amazing characters who, I don't know about you, but I can't let go of them. You must be,
oh, they're still in my head.
I'm going to say, how on earth can you cope without them? They've got to be in your life. But what's really great is that when you describe the character, you know, I'm sure we can say that Monica has a cafe. Can we? Is that too much?
Yeah, of course. Alert?
So, you know, Monica runs a cafe, and on the surface, everything looks great, doesn't it? It's a pretty cafe and the coffee's good and everything looks great. And for each of the characters, there is this sort of persona and how they present themselves to the world and what the outsider would think looking in. But then when they write their little section in the Authenticity Project notebook, we see that if you scratch the surface, as with everyone, there's a whole well underneath. Mm. And actually things aren't what they seem, and they aren't, everything isn't as marvelous as one might think. There's stuff going on, and I suppose, you know, one of the messages is that's the case for everybody, and none of us should ever judge anyone,
but no,
you know, until you've walked a mile in their shoes, as the saying goes, you know.
Exactly. And we see how the characters get each other wrong. You know, they meet each other and make assumptions about each other, and we know as the reader that those assumptions are often incorrect, and, you know, which is what we all do all the time. And, you know, I mean, I'm quite fascinated by people's faults, you know, because, and actually right at the beginning of the book, there's a quote, I shall read it, from Leonard Cohen, and you probably recognize it. He says, ring the bells that still can ring, forget your perfect offering, there is a crack in everything, that's how the light gets in. And it's one of his lyrics from Anthem. And, you know, I think that's so true. I think actually we all pretend to be perfect, and we all put this sort of, you know, perfect face on our Instagram feeds and our Facebook feeds, but actually what makes us interesting isn't the thing, the perfect things, it's actually the, you know, your weaknesses and the things you struggle with and the things that make you unique and human and give you strength. And
yeah, totally, you know,
that's really what I wanted to explore, is not only that people aren't what they seem, but actually they're more lovable because of that.
Yeah, Did you ever read that blog post that I wrote called "You Are Flawsome" with an E?
It's a great word.
Yeah, it's a great word. But it's based on, I did an interview with on the podcast actually with a guy called Patrick Reagan who runs a charity called Kintsugi Hope. And kintsugi, as I'm sure you know, is, if you don't already, you'll love this. It's the Japanese word for, it literally translates as golden joinery. Mm-hmm. So if you break a vase or you break a beautiful bit of pottery, they put it back together again using a gold thread. So the broken thing becomes more beautiful than it was before. It's really cool.
That's so funny because I actually mentioned kintsugi in the novel.
Oh, do you? Oh,
it actually got taken out because I wrote a whole bit about kintsugi. My editor took it out.
Oh, what a shame! Well, there you go.
Yeah. I think it was a section of the book that had got too long and involved. But I love that theory.
It's great, isn't it?
Actually, not only do those flaws make you more beautiful, but they make you stronger. You know.
Yeah. Tell us where kindness comes in, because, you know, right now, one of the things that, you know, while we're in lockdown, one of the things that I'm trying to kind of remind, you know, I run the Sober Club and I work with a lot of people who are ditching the booze and some have got really difficult stuff going on. A lot of people are finding this really hard to process all of this. And I think it's just really important to remember that kindness isn't cancelled, both to ourselves and others. So tell us where kindness comes in this book, because it feels like it flows through it, actually.
What I wanted to explore, I guess, is I live in London, so relatively central, and I'm surrounded by thousands and thousands of people, and yet, you know, there are very few neighbours I know a number of them by face, but there's a lot of them I don't even know their names, and it got me. I'd be if we got to know people what's really going on in their lives. And you know, what happens with this little notebook is it gets passed between real people within a community, and they're all very different. So, they're different sexualities, different nationalities, but what they all have in common is once they read each other's stories, they have this urge to find the other people and somehow make their lives a little bit better. And it's not by doing huge things, but just it shows really how small acts of kindness can really transform somebody's life. So
yeah, and even the most sort of the most kind of selfish character, as it were, your Hazard, your main man, who at first glance you would think is just an ex-addict and just absolutely just loves himself.
Yeah, it's not very nice at the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, he loves himself, doesn't he? He's your massive ego, and so you wouldn't automatically think that someone like that would be wanting to help the person he'd read about, and yet it becomes his absolute mission to fix, in inverted commas, to make it okay for the person whose story he's read. I suppose there is that in all of us, in a way, isn't there? There is that yearning to, if we can offer an act of kindness, if we can be altruistic. I suppose deep down, most of us know that actually we get more benefit from giving the kindness than the person receiving it. That's proven scientifically. And maybe we kind of all know that in our gut somewhere.
Yeah. And you mentioned it at the beginning of this discussion about being kind to yourself as well. And, actually I've had a few people contact me having read the book to say that it helped them to forgive themselves their own flaws. And I think right now, more than ever, not only do we need to obviously think about other people and think about our neighbours and think about the people working in the NHS, for goodness sake, but I think we also need to be really kind to ourselves, because we're all going through the hardest time that most of us have ever lived through, and just processing that takes up so much energy, and living with that fear and anxiety takes up loads of space and again energy, and so we can't expect too much of ourselves. And I do hate all the stuff about we should be learning an instrument,
learning a language, Joe Wixing every single day.
Yeah, I mean, because actually, if you can just make it through to the end of the day without losing it, then you're doing a great thing.
Totally. Yeah, I think that's really true. So important to, you know, point out there's so many people putting huge pressure on themselves right now, and they're and as you say, it goes back to the thing you were talking about, social media. You know, now more than ever we're seeing all the glossy stuff. You know, and we're not seeing so much of the, I'm actually not coping very well. Mm. I did a little post recently to people on my list for the Sober Club and just said, actually, don't be afraid to ask for help.
Yeah,
and it was
that.
Quite surprising how many kind of replies and messages I got from people saying, well, now you mention it, actually, I am feeling like I'm not keeping up with everything else, and I'm not like everyone else at the moment. I'm not able. It's awful, isn't it? It's awful. Yeah. That kind of feeling that I'm not good enough because I'm not taking this time to learn five languages and crochet.
And I think the other thing is, you know, and again, we're going slightly off topic here, but I think it's important, is, you know, I think we feel guilty about feeling sad, you know, yeah. And there are things, all of us have lost stuff.
We've it's a grieving process. It's really grieving process.
You know, we've lost businesses, we've lost money, you know, we've lost a whole chunk of our lives. And, you know, I feel guilty about feeling sad about that because I think there are other people who've lost.
Of course, of course, of course.
But the truth is, you know, we should allow ourselves to grieve for the things we've lost. You know, even though we're much better off than you know other people might be, it doesn't mean that it's not hard.
Absolutely. We've spoken a little bit about the kindness in the book, but also, of course, it kind of goes without saying that the whole book is based around the power of community. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, that's not something that happens that much usually. I mean, one of the amazing things that we're starting to see from all of this is most of us are getting to recognize a little bit of a sense of community, even if it's just that we all go and clap on a Thursday night, whatever it might be, or we've all got, you know, even if, as you say, you know, you're in maybe in London where you don't get to know your neighbors, it's brought everyone right back to having to focus on the home that they've chosen as their home.
People
who don't spend any time in their home, like kind of ever, they just literally go back to Kip for a few hours, and they're having to kind of rethink all of that. So ultimately, you know, the people around you become critically important, and caring for each other becomes critically important, doesn't it?
And it's funny, isn't it, because I mean obviously I didn't know any of this was going to happen, but I keep getting messages from people saying this is, you know, the perfect book for this time, because it, you know, it is so focused on community and you know, the importance of the people living, you know, immediately near you. And you know, you're right, I hope that one of the things that will, positive things that will come out of all of this, is that we'll retain some of that, you know. And there are some lovely stories you keep hearing, like, you know, I heard this fabulous story about somebody said that their next door neighbor, so an old lady who they hadn't spoken to for 30 years since their football went into her garden, and she got cross with them, and they were doing her shopping for her, and they repaired that sort of relationship. Yeah. And that's just, you know, a very small thing, but you know, and I, you know, it just in my immediate area, I now know my neighbours much better than I did before, because we make a point of checking in on each other.
So. Yeah, it's really true. What else would you, or what are the main things you'd like people to kind of take away from the book then?
Well, as we said, kindness and community, and I think you know, the importance of being honest about who you are, not just for you but for other people. And you know, this is what I found when I published the Sober Diaries, is, you know, I was terrified about the idea of being authentic, about sort of telling my truth. And, you know, 3 nights before it was published, I didn't sleep at all. And, you know, have you ever had that that recurring dream where you feel like you're walking down a street naked and everyone's staring at you? I had that dream, you know, and it was because I was so, you know, I was worried that I would be trolled and that people would hate me and they'd call me all sorts of terrible names. And actually what I realized is, when you're really honest about your life, which all my characters end up doing, people are really generous and really sort of, you know, if you make yourself myself vulnerable. People are generally really kind to you because, you know, I mean, apart from anything else, what were they going to call me that I hadn't already called myself?
Exactly.
You know, I mean, I'd already said, yes, I'm a lush, and yes, I'm a bad mother, and yes, I'm sort of irresponsible, and all of these, you know, I'd confessed to all of that. So there was nothing left for people to hurt me with, if that makes sense.
Totally. I think the other thing I'd just like to just discuss with you as well, just briefly, is, I mean, I've interviewed you before for my little tribe and for the podcast, where we focused on the benefits of writing, sort of writing as therapy. Now, not everyone will want to write a blog that's going to be published, and certainly not everyone will want to write a novel. But actually, what are your views on all of us actually getting a pen, preferably an actual pen and a bit of paper, and writing our thoughts down? Because I think it's absolutely critical, actually. I think it's an amazing thing to do. It really is a therapeutic exercise, almost like a form of meditation, just actually getting your thoughts out.
Yeah, I mean, it really saved my life. I mean, I'm not exaggerating. I think writing saved me for several reasons. One is because it allowed me to understand what I was thinking, what I was going through. One is because I was doing it on a blog, it found this community which was incredibly supportive and helpful for me. But even without that, even just writing personally, what it does is it gives you something to look remind yourself where you started and how you were feeling, and you can see a progression, hopefully, which is really helpful. But the other thing you mentioned, sort of meditation, you know, it's, I found mindfulness really tricky. You know, I've tried over and over again, I've tried loads of apps, I've tried over and over again to meditate, and I find it really hard to keep my thoughts still, and writing does that for me. So whether it's fiction or non-fiction, still and focused, and that gives your mind a break, and particularly at a time like this where we're all catastrophizing and it's easy to let your thought get completely out of control. The act of writing, or if writing negative, because it has the same effect. So for some people, drawing,
sorry, just say, or, that, hold on, Claire, just say that again, because the line cut out very slightly. Just say that last bit again.
So if writing isn't your thing, then anything creative. So for some people, it's drawing or painting. It has exactly the same effect.
Yeah.
Or gardening, or actually exercise can do the same thing.
Yeah. So it's actually all the ings. It's all the ings, isn't it? All the ings, knitting, dancing, apart from drinking.
Find your ing.
All the ings apart from drinking.
And often actually, apart from drinking, often the way of finding your ing is to look back at what you liked doing when you were a child. And I loved reading and writing, but whatever you loved as a child is often a really good key, a good clue.
Because I think this is it with, you know, with when you get your thoughts out, when you take yourself out of that panic state, you know, many of us at this point in time spend a fair bit of the day in panic mode, where particularly listening to the news, right, we kind of, if you let your thoughts race away with you and you get into all the what if I've lost my business, my work, what if my, you know, job folds, what if it, you can feel the panic rising. And it's a really unhealthy place to be. And yes, we do need to be clued in with what's going on, but we also need to set boundaries around that. Similarly with social media, you can go down rabbit holes with everything. So actually, to take some time out to say, right, I'm actually going to just find a way of releasing some of this stuff. So just as you say, if you are writing, to actually write without trying to edit yourself, oh, that's not very good writing, or I can't publish that, literally just lay it all out without any editing, the stream of consciousness stuff, because nobody else needs to read it, right?
No, exactly. And you know what, I mean, I have to confess that the last 2 weeks, so since lockdown started, I found it really difficult to write. And it's, you know, the first time in 5 years I've not written anything for ages. And I know, and the reason is because I spend the whole time reading the news and sort of, you know, as you say, scrolling through social media. And I found that my concentration has gone, and I know that if I sit down and start writing again, I will feel much better. So that is my aim for this afternoon. I'm going to get back on the writing, because I know it's hugely therapeutic for me. And you know, the really difficult thing is that the harder it is to do, the more you actually need it.
Yeah, totally. So the good news is we can still get your book. We can't see it in the shops, and it's such a shame because it is so beautiful. Just hold it up, just in case anyone.
Unless you go to Tesco or Asda.
Yeah. Yes, of course. Hold it up to the screen in case anyone's watching this on video. Oh, it's so beautiful, beautiful book.
And it's got this gold leaf.
Very
so
nice.
So you can get it in Tesco and Asda, and you can also get it via Waterstones.com or Amazon.com. And if you're indie, if you're independent, bookseller is delivering, you should be able to get it through them as well.
Excellent.
Or if you don't want to order a hard copy, it's on Kindle and Audio and Apple Books and all those sorts of places. So.
Great. Well, it comes so highly recommended. I absolutely love it. I mean, when I finished it, I was so absolutely gutted. I just did not know what I was going to do. So I don't suppose there's any chance of a sequel or a movie or anything, because, you know, I need more of these characters.
Oh,
I mean,
that's so kind of you.
I've had
more than one offer from Hollywood, so but I haven't accepted anything yet. So hopefully it will be a movie or a TV series at some stage. But and in the meantime, I'm editing now my second book, which isn't a direct sequel, but it's similar style. And so if there's a character in it you'll love, actually, Jamie, I'll tell you all.
Can't wait. I wish you so much success. It's so exciting.
Thank you so much for having me on the podcast.
No worries. You so deserve it. It's amazing. So the book is The Authenticity Project. Claire Pooley was my guest on this special bonus episode of the podcast. For lots more from Claire and others, make sure you check out the episodes of Alcohol Free Life podcast. You can find it at thesoberclub.com or wherever you usually get your podcasts. And if any of the themes in what we were talking about interests you, then get in touch and check out thesoberclub.com. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast with Jamie Lee Grace. Please subscribe to us on iTunes, rate us, share on social media, and tune in again.